Yasoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janabalava Giribaradari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Asto Tadasata Shishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're continuing our lead-up classes to Prabhupada's 50th anniversary of installing Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda. So we have a verse today from the third canto. This is chapter 25. It's called The Glories of Devotional Service. And we're reading text 21. Tikshita tikshava karunika surida sarvadehinam ajata shatrava shanta sarva sarubhushana tikshava karunika Sarida sarvadehinam ajata shatrava shanta sarva sarubhushana tatikshava karunika Sarida sarvadehinam ajata shatrava shanta Sarva Sadubhushanam Tatikshava Karunika Surida Sarvadehinam Ajata Satravashanta Sarva Sadubhushana Tatikshava Karunika Sarida sarvadehinam Ajata shatravashanta Sarva sarvadehinam Tatikshava karunika Shantaina. Shanta. Shanta. Titik Shiva Karinika. Sarvadehina. Ladies, the Tikshava Karunika, Trashanta, Sadhava Sadhavushanam. Tadikshava Karanika Surya Sarvadehina Shanta Sarva Sarvabhushanam Tadikshava Tolerant Karunika Merciful Surida Friendly Sarvadehinam to all living beings. Ajatashatrava inimical to none. Shanta peaceful. Shadava abiding by scriptures. Sadhubhushana adorned with sublime characteristics. Translation. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. Please repeat. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all his characteristics are sublime. So this is a verse spoken by Kapila Muni, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's speaking to his mother, Devahuti. His mother is in a situation where her husband has just renounced. He's left home. And so she is with her son, her exalted son. And she turns to him and she says, I am sick of the disturbance caused by the material senses. You please help me. She's aware that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he can eradicate her ignorance. And so in humility, she expresses herself in this way. And he's very pleased, Kapila Muni, by her question. And he begins to answer by explaining there's a relationship between the Supreme Lord and the individual living entity. And that relationship can be perfected and evoked through devotional service. Thus the chapter is named The Glories of Devotional Service. And he also explains that this devotional service is given, it's evoked in our hearts through sadhus. We must have the association of sadhus in order to be involved, to be engaged in devotional service. So then the question is, well, who is a sadhu? And so this verse that we're reading today is an answer to that question. There's seven characteristics mentioned in this verse. Tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities, no enemies, peaceful, abides by the scriptures, and all that person's characteristics are sublime. In other places, the list is extended, 26 qualities of a devotee. So there are many more than this, but this gives us a hint of those exalted qualities that we find in a sadhu. So actually, these qualities are there within all of us because all of us are spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. which means that we have innately these qualities within us, but they're not exhibited at present because we're covered by combinations of ignorance and passion and goodness. And therefore, we exhibit other less desirable qualities. However, through the process of devotional service, we can rid ourselves of the influence of ignorance and passion and even goodness and come to the stage where we can exhibit these qualities. And for us to do that, it's important to have an example of one who has already done that. And so we're fortunate that we have in our Hare Krishna movement the example of Srila Prabhupada, for he indeed exhibited these qualities, and he wanted to evoke them in us by gradually purifying us of the influence of the modes of nature. So this is the goal for all of us, and it's done gradually. It's not an abrupt change, but it's done gradually. And we know that when Prabhupada first came to America, he very much imbibed himself and exhibited the same mode of thought that he mentioned to Indradumya Swami famously when he said, "Preach boldly and completely depend on the holy name of Krishna," which is exactly what he did. That famously we all know, after his struggles in India to come to America, finally when he came, he attracted a few people and went to Tompkins Square Park and started chanting the holy names of Krishna. And more people were attracted. It was like Prabhupada uses this phrase, in like a needle and out like a plow. So you start by chanting, and it becomes attractive. It seems quite simple to chant. But then as one becomes more involved and wants to progress, then there's four rules and regulations. We know no eating meat, fish, and eggs, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. So then one progresses. One frees oneself gradually from these lower modes. And then there's associating with devotees and worshiping the Lord and becoming involved, mind, body, and soul, in some sort of service that's suitable to us. And so that, along with the philosophy, all these activities, along with the philosophy, engage people more and more in Krishna consciousness. And we realize gradually that Prabhupada was introducing an entire culture to us. It wasn't a small thing, but actually he was changing our values, changing our behavior, changing our mode of thought, our habits. It was like he was transplanting a culture that wasn't so present even in India. In India it was being lost, and carrying it to the West and giving us a whole new way to live, which began with the Maha Mantra, but then extended and extended, so that even the norms that we experienced were different. And culture can change over the years, just like when I was growing up, divorce was practically unheard of, practically. In my community, there wasn't divorce. You'd sometimes hear some strange, but now divorce is just part of, it's normal, practically. So culture changes, and Prabhupada had this Herculean, I mean, it's a phenomenal task that he gave himself, given by his spiritual master, to change our culture, our very value system, our goals. And to understand how he did that, even our concept of how society should be organized, our concept of economics, it was all radicalized, transformed by Srila Prabhupada. So part of this culture is duty. If we look at our scriptures through this lens of duty, we'll find that it's emphasized repeatedly. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has the sacred duty to fight as a Kshatriya, to protect the innocent. However, because he sees on the so-called enemy side friends and relatives and teachers, he decides it would be better for him not to do his duty. So in one sense, the whole Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna to encourage Arjuna to do his duty. And there are so many verses that Krishna says that we're meant to fight this religious war. Not doing so will incur sin. That you do your duty without being attached to the results. Throughout the Gita, we can find references to this important driving force of duty. And similarly, in the Bhagavatam, towards the end of the first canto, Parikshit says, what is everyone's duty, and especially what is the duty of one who is about to die? And there's so many beautiful verses that our occupational duties are actually meant for ultimate liberation. They're not meant for material gain. They're meant ultimately to please the personality of Godhead. And in that way, we can be satisfied if it's done without motivation, without adulteration, without interruption. So in this way, duty is emphasized very much. And if we look at Prabhupada's life, we can see how he himself imbibed duty throughout his life. We know that he met his spiritual master in 1922. At that time, he was a nationalist. So when his spiritual master, immediately upon being in Prabhupada's presence, said, you're educated, young men, you should give this message of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking people of the world. And Prabhupada argued with him that first we have to become independent and then people will listen to us. And he said he was very happy to be defeated because his spiritual master pointed out that this knowledge of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is transcendental to whether a country is dependent or independent. And it can't wait. There's no reason for this to wait. So Prabhupada said at one point he was so convinced and so compelled by his spiritual master that he thought, I would have taken it up immediately, but I was married. And not only was he married, he had a child. And he said to do it immediately would have been an injustice. He used that word, injustice, because as a grihastha, he had a responsibility to his family. So he waited 30 years. But in that time, he started Back to Godhead magazine, writing for it, distributing it personally, paying for the publication. So he did what he could. He helped support the Gaudiya Math. And later on, much later, it was over 30 years later, then his duty changed at that time. It's not that duty is rigid, but according to our place in life, the duty changes. And so he was able to give up his family. His children were grown. His wife was taken care of. And then he became a vanaprastha and finally a sannyasi. And at one point he said something which really struck me when he was a sannyasi. He was recalling it. And he said that at that time he decided he would not work. That if Krishna sent him something, he would accept. And if he didn't, he would starve. So he was completely dependent. There was no pension plan, no savings in the bank. Just completely dependent on the mercy of Krishna. As we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Madhavendra Puri also, you know, if something came, he would accept. If nothing came, then he would sit and chant. So Prabhupada had that same mood. And also this fixed determination to fulfill the instructions of his spiritual master. So we know the story very well. I hope all of us, how Prabhupada struggled to come to America and finally went to Butler, Pennsylvania. And from there he went to New York. And at first he was the guest of Dr. Mishra. And then gradually he started preaching on his own. So I have a little quote here I wanted to read to you. This was from March 4th, 1966. Now, the International Society of Krishna Consciousness was founded in July of 1966. So this is before the founding of our movement. And Prabhupada was still on the Upper West Side preaching. He had classes. So this occasion he was preaching from Bhagavad Gita. And there was a woman there who was very curious. She kept asking questions during the talks. So at one point, the topic came up about holy places. And Prabhupada mentioned a few holy places in India. And then he says this. Now I am sitting, New York, the world's greatest city, so magnificent city, But my heart is always hankering after that Vrindavan. I shall be very happy to return to my Vrindavan, that sacred place. But then you may say, why are you here? Now, because it is my duty. I have brought some message for you people. Because I am ordered by superior, my spiritual master, that whatever you have learned, you should go to the Western country and you must distribute this knowledge. So, in spite of all my difficulties, all my inconveniences, I am here because I am in duty. That is my personal convenience if I go and sit down at Vrindavan. I shall be very comfortable there. I'll have no anxiety, nothing of the sort, you see. But I have taken all the risk in the old age because I am duty-bound. So I have to execute my duty in spite of all my inconveniences. That is the idea. So it really shows that Prabhupada completely dedicated himself to the order of his spiritual master, regardless of personal troubles that he undertook. And there were many, as we know, physical troubles. And then as he got disciples, there were more and more troubles. Movement spread, but it also spread with multitude of troubles because we were very much caught up in another culture and very much unqualified, really, to execute the exalted mission that Prabhupada had in mind. And yet he used us. At one point he said Krishna didn't send him much to work with. But nonetheless, he used us as best he could and kept trying tirelessly to imbibe this culture within us through the chanting of the holy name. And it was not an easy job. We didn't have the right upbringing, and we tended to fall back to old habits. And he kept trying and trying, despite our failings, you could say. Despite our slips, he took it as his sacred duty. At one point, he sent a young couple, or perhaps they decided to go to Santa Fe, which is in the U.S., the southwest part of the U.S., to open a temple there. And the husband, the young new husband, had to leave to help his mother, who was in New York, who had some troubles. So in his absence, the wife, the new wife, had an affair with someone who was visiting the temple. And when Prabhupada heard about this, Govinda Dasi was his secretary, and she said he was just completely shocked that this would go on, because his own culture was, you have a wife and that's a lifelong commitment. Even he said at one point he wasn't very happy with his wife, so he thought of getting another wife, but it wasn't that he would leave the first one. He was still committed to protecting her and providing for her. So when he heard this, Govinda Dasi said he was just shocked that people could be so irresponsible and not follow the vows that they had taken so solemnly. But he eventually understood our fallen nature, and so he encouraged this young woman to have an honorable relationship with her, the person that she was with. And he said to them, he could see it in the letters, he says, now you live outside the temple, but you earn money and you send money to the temple. Every month, $100, which at that time was quite a bit of money. So they did that, and Prabhupada was pleased. He said, thank you very much. You know, in other words, he accommodated our fallen nature, used us in Krishna's service, and kept encouraging us. And the young man was not, who had been married to this woman, he was no longer interested in grihastha life, so Prabhupada encouraged him. Now you're free of these entanglements, now you can preach and not be distracted in this way. So, yeah, he stretched, Prabhupada stretched for us in our fallen state. Even there was another incident, just talking about what Prabhupada had to go through. He gave the very first sannyas in India, and he instructed this new young sannyasi, now you can go to London. He had some contact in London and tried to do something here in England. And the young man ignored that and went straight back to New York. And Prabhupada, again, he said, he used the word shocked, that he would act in this way. And yet Prabhupada engaged him as time went on. There was some difficulty, but eventually he became established and Prabhupada encouraged him. So it was a constant battle, you could say, for Prabhupada to try to overcome our lower natures and help us progress. And as much as we stumbled and fell and went this way and that way, he would still try to engage us in Krishna's service in whatever way that we were able to do that. So to give a further example of this, I have here a letter that Prabhupada wrote in 1973. This is January 1973. As to a devotee named Madhukar, whom I never met, I don't think. It's very instructive. Madhukar was a grihasta, so Prabhupada's instructing him along that line. But for those here who are renounced, you could just take it that Prabhupada's talking about duty, and whatever ashram we're in, we have duties, and so we should try to do them to the best of our ability. So he says to Madhukar, "Now you are married, there is some obligation according to our Krishna consciousness or Vedic system. These things cannot be taken so lightly, otherwise the whole thing will become a farce. Simply get married without considering what is the serious nature of married life. Then, if there is little disturbance, or if I do not like my wife or my husband, let me go away. Everyone else is doing like that. So in this way, the whole thing is becoming a farce. You say that your association together was hindering your advancement, but Krishna consciousness marriage system should not be taken in that way, that if there is a botheration, that means something is hindering my spiritual progress. No. Once it is adopted, the grihasta life, even it may be troublesome at times, it must be fulfilled as my occupational duty. One mistake of judgment often made by the neophyte devotees is that any time there is some disturbance or some difficulty, they are considering the conditions or the external circumstances under which the difficulty took place are the cause of the difficulty itself. That is not the fact. In this material world, there will always be some difficulty, no matter in this situation or that situation. Therefore, simply by changing my status of occupation or my status of life, that will not help anything. Because the real fact is that if there is any difficulty with others, that is my lack of Krishna consciousness, not theirs. Is this clear? Krishna says that his dearest devotee is one who does not put others into difficulty. In fact, who puts no one into difficulty. So try to judge the matter on these points. Whether or not you are putting either your wife or yourself into some difficulty. The right understanding of Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna's understanding. In other words, Arjuna came to the conclusion that he must perform his occupational duty not as a material obligation for reasons of wife, family, friends, reputation, professional integrity like that. No. Rather, he must conduct the functions of his station of life only as a devotional service performed for Krishna. That means that devotional service is what is important, not my occupational duty. But it does not mean that because occupational duty is not the real consideration, that I should give it up and do something else. Thinking that devotional service may be carried on under whatever circumstances which I may whimsically decide. Krishna recommended Arjuna to remain as he was, not to disrupt the order of society and go against his own nature, just for convenience sake. Our occupational duty is not arbitrary. That means that once we have taken up some field of activity, if we are advanced in our understanding, then we shall not change it for another. Rather, Our devotion is the important factor. So what does it matter what I am doing so long my work and energy are completely devoted to Krishna? Just like Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has no work, neither he has anything to do. Still, he comes here to teach us this lesson. He accepts not only his occupational duty as a cowherd boy, a royal prince, but also he accepts married life, he enters politics, he is a philosopher, he is even chariot driver during a great battle. He does not give the example of himself avoiding his occupational duty. So if Krishna himself is exhibiting by his own conduct what is the perfection of existence, then we should heed such example if we are intelligent. Occupational duty must be there, either this one or that one. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda, Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai. Occupational duty must be there, either this one or that one, but once I'm engaged in something, occupational duty, then I should not change that or give it up. That is the worst mistake. Devotional service is not bound up by such designations. Therefore, once I have chosen, it is better to stick in that way and develop my devotional attitude into full-blown love of God. That is Arjuna's understanding. So a letter you can meditate on quite a bit, because Prabhupada here is saying that whatever we do, we're doing it for Krishna. So in one sense, what we do is irrelevant. You know, if we're cooking, if we're distributing books, if we're worshiping the deity, if we're married, if we're single, the whole point is to engage our mind, our body, our energy, our thoughts in Krishna's service. And then what you're doing, it doesn't matter. It's according to your own propensity. But it's not that, he says here, it's not that that occupational duty is unimportant. We choose it, and then it becomes our sacred duty for Krishna. Not that we can whimsically change it, thinking, oh, devotional service is important and not my occupational duty. That causes disruption in our own minds, in society. And he says that Krishna himself gives the example, that Krishna has nothing, no need to do anything. He's completely self-sufficient. There's no obligation for him. And yet, when he comes, he gives the example. And he mentions also in the Gita, if he did not perform his prescribed duties, everyone would follow his path, and the worlds would be put to ruination. Therefore, he performs his prescribed duties, as Prabhupada says, cowherd boy, a prince. He's a grihasta, he does politics, he's a philosopher. He drives a chariot during the battle. So we should follow his example and follow, as we see in Prabhupada's own life, how he was so, you know, 30 years as a grihasta, because it would be an injustice to do anything else, to change. So this is in the Gita also, Krishna mentions that if we give up our prescribed duties out of illusion, that's considered to be in the mode of ignorance. And Prabhupada gives the example that we must cook for Krishna. Krishna accepts these offerings. So if one thinks, oh, I'm a sannyasi, the sannyasis don't cook, this is illusion. If the cause is, the need is to cook for Krishna, even the sannyasis cook for Krishna. And also Krishna mentions that to give up one's prescribed duties because they're troublesome, this is called the mode of passion. This is also not at all recommended. And the example is given there. What is that example of the mode of passion? Oh, yes. That if someone is... Hare Krishna, did this go off? If someone is working in a factory and thinks, no, I don't want to work in this factory, it's Maya to work in the factory, and stops giving their profit, their salary to Krishna, this is considered troublesome. Did it go off? This is considered, someone's working in a factory and giving their salary to Krishna to help the Krishna consciousness movement. And to give that up is called the mode of passion. It's troublesome. And then in the mode of goodness, one works because one is obliged to work and gives the fruits to Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions again, if someone is working in a factory, they don't associate with the work of the factory. They don't associate with the workers of the factory. They understand that I'm doing this for Krishna. And when they give the results of that work to Krishna, that's considered transcendental, even to the mode of goodness. So these are the instructions of Krishna. Again, as I mentioned, if you look at the Bhagavad Gita through the lens of duty, you'll find throughout the Gita, duty is emphasized as a way to progress in spiritual life if it's done with the right consciousness and done with the understanding that it's not so rigid that as we go through the different phases of life, our duties may change, as we see with Prabhupada, as we see even with Krishna's example. So those are some thoughts on this. Maybe there's some conversation we could have about it with you, Nam Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you so much, Madhava Shaka, for very enlightening. You made a point earlier that when Srila Prabhupada came to the West and how there were devotees who were from such a culture where things were troublesome for him. I suppose my point is that all Prabhupada disciples are so sincere because that's why they are where they are today. I suppose I wanted to ask the point you made that it was a very different kind of a culture. What was the point that where all of you felt that that's it, now we have to be sincere, we have to be serious, and what is it that made that change for most of your good self and all the other Prabhupada disciples? Like you're saying that initially you gave an example of a sannyasi who was given an instruction to go to London but he didn't, but what happened over a period of time that all of a sudden that sincerity came about, and how did that happen?
I think each follower of Srila Prabhupada would answer in his or her own way. That is quite an individual thing. And also it's an ongoing thing. Is it again gone? So I think each. Is it on?
Hare Krishna.
Each disciple would answer in his or her own way, because it's a very individual journey, and it's also an ongoing journey. Each morning we make a decision that today I'm going to try my best to be attentive when I chant my rounds, to serve Krishna with care. So in that way I think everyone would have their own individual journey. In answer to your question, we could hear from a Prabhupada disciple present.
I would say the same. We're all different. We're all individuals. It's not like there was, some explosion or something and everyone simultaneously saw things the same. And some of us didn't see it and left. So that would be my answer, which is basically the same as your answer.
Hare Krishna, Madhava Shaka. Thank you for the class this morning. I just had this question because, you were talking about that tendency to fall back into bad habits. And I was just thinking if you have any thoughts on that, on how to overcome that, because sometimes we can see it, sometimes we can't see it, sometimes we overcome it, sometimes we are not able to overcome it, even knowingly as well. So, wanted to know, like, how can we keep on constantly working on it? Because it's always there.
I think it's an important question for all of us, that when we feel less inspired in Krishna consciousness, what do we do? So certainly good association is critical at that point. We want to be around people who are enthused so that we can imbibe their enthusiasm. And also good habits are very important, that one morning we may not like, may not feel like going to the temple, but if we have that rhythm in our lives, we go to the temple, we chant, we do some service, that even though our mind may be arguing with us, we can just say, you know, thank you for sharing, but I have something to do today. And go to the temple and chant our rounds and proceed with our service. So there are many, I guess you could say, ways to try to conquer. Prabhupada at one point says that this is like a war. Fighting Maya is like a war. And so if you have a war going on, there's all sorts of ways that you can try to defeat the enemy. You know, you can go to the left flank, the right flank, you can send a drone, you have spies. So in the same way, we have as many points in our arsenal, as many weapons in our arsenal to fight Maya as possible. So certainly good habits are one, good association, reading regularly, all these things will be very helpful. And especially if we can disclose our minds in confidence to a qualified person, that person will be able to help us also overcome whatever obstacles our mind is sending us at that point.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji Vishakha, for your lecture. I would like to ask you a question about duty. If we see a person who complain about faults in others and connect his failure to circumstances or other mistakes, is it our duty to point that actually he's the cause of all these mistakes and what he's in his troubles and his troubles, or we should just tolerate and say, all right, like chant more, something like this, encourage him?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that it really depends on the relationship between the person who's having these thoughts and oneself, that if one is a teacher or a superior in some way, there might be a way to approach that subject. But very often, perhaps more often than not, if one points that out, that one, you know, you're considering yourself the victim, but you should take responsibility, da-da-da, it may have an adverse reaction in the person. They may not be ready to accept that responsibility and may become upset even that it's suggested. So it has to be done with care and sensitivity according to time and place and relationship. But over time, if the person simply goes on, and especially time is very healing, so one eventually, I think, will come to that understanding if one is sincerely looking. But it may, as I say, to do it too soon, too direct, may not be productive. So very often, if you simply listen to a person, you know, that they can relieve themselves, that can have a cathartic effect. Thank you so much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.